My tiny
know,
si- Yeah, sorry,
go
go
ahead.
on.
What was that?
I was gonna say my tiny little Saturn isn't hauling office chairs around very easily, so
Wow.
I'm sitting in classy dollar store wicker for this.
Well, my cousins moved out of their house a couple of months ago, and they had this little office chair that had no base to it. It was just the seat and the backing, and the whole leg and wheels were gone. And they asked if we wanted it. And I said, well, I don't know, ask Lindsay if she wants it. And she took it to mean that I had wanted it. So now we have a legless, wheelless office chair that we can't do anything with sitting in our storage room among all of the other crap that we can't do anything with.
That's awesome. So it's like one of those cool, air quotes, gaming chairs they sell that basically just like sits on the floor with no armrests.
Pretty
And
much. Well, this one's
yeah,
got armrests,
at least there's
so it's
that,
even
right?
less comfortable because you have these hard plastic armrests and you can't really move around in it.
Jeez, that's classy stuff.
Oh, yeah. So, you know what would make me feel a lot better about it, though?
What would that be?
Punching a bear in the face.
Just punching it in the face. I like that.
Just
Nothing else.
punching
Just
it in the face.
smacking it.
Repeatedly, perhaps, but just one good punch to the face, you know?
Hey, and thanks to Ubisoft, soon you'll be able to.
That's true. I'm really looking forward to that in Ghost Recon. No, not Ghost Recon. That's right. It's that other thing that they do, that other franchise. What was it called?
I think it's called Assassin's Creedence or something. Creed, possibly. I don't know. They
Interesting.
might have something on it, though.
All right. Well, yeah, they released a trailer about it last week, and I just remember something about a bear, and I'm looking forward to punching that bear.
Oh, it's gonna be. It was a pretty scary bear for a game trailer.
That was a big bear.
Yeah, that's kind of frightening. And I had the image of, I forget which map it is in the Ghost Recon beta, of just crawling along the fence in the woods and a bear just coming over it and taking me out myself.
Was it Mill?
Yep, the middle one. Thanks for that.
I wasn't a fan of that. I mean, some parts of that level were nice, but I preferred Pipeline.
Yeah, I completely agree, but that's a hilarious image now. But yeah, the Assassin's Creed trailer is pretty great as far as gameplay goes.
Oh yeah, and that it was really fast too for the community unlocking that. It took a day and a half, 2 days, I think, for 1,776,000 people to like it on Facebook.
Which is not surprising. The thing is I kind of like, I mean, we've said before, I kind of lost the Assassin's Creed lust after the second one, especially Revelations. I mean, I got probably 3 hours into the game and I just was bored and didn't like it. This one looks just so quick and fast paced, and like they fixed every combat issue that I've ever had with the game. It looks flawless. Like, I'm actually really excited for an Assassin's Creed game again.
Oh, absolutely. When I first time watching that, seeing a few things really set it off for me. There's the what someone on Twitter called the rope dart, which I explained to Lindsay as the knife with the string or the rope that he throws and catches someone with. I think rope dart is a more succinct way of saying that, so I'm going to go with that from now on. Just that looks like such a fun mechanic. And then the thing that excited me most, because at its heart, to me, Assassin's Creed has always been a really fun platformer. You know, a big open world-ish kind of platformer, but it was Prince of Persia expanded. And what I saw in the trailer was him go through a building rather than over a building, rather than along a building, going into a room, running through it, and I want to see that as a common option, not just a piece here or a piece there, but have a more real feeling to, Boston or wherever you're going to be.
That is exactly what caught my eye too, was he ran through a building and it looked like he went quickly. Part of my problem with Assassin's Creed was always you could get fluid a little bit, but you're just jumping rooftops and it's really just, an elevated ground jumping. That's all he's really doing. And to be able to go through buildings and draw enemies in and set up attacks from inside, that's incredible. That's what I've always wanted in those games. The rest of them were great, but God, being able to actually explore inside as well as outside, that's huge.
Oh yeah, no, and that's the thing that excited me most out of it. You know, the bear was nice, the rope dart was cool, the fluidity of the combat, which for me, Assassin's Creed in the beginning with the first one, the face-to-face combat was absolutely infuriating.
Oh, it was terrible. It was 15 minutes of just of nothing.
Yeah, it's all block, 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 and then, oh, you got a lucky shot. And then I to this day, I have not yet completely beat Assassin's Creed because I get to the point where I go to see King Richard, and he has his Templars surround me saying, you know, if God is with you, then you'll be able to survive and we'll talk.
Oh, yeah, and you have the Animus basically blocks you off in that certain area.
Yeah. The trick to it is you have to counter everyone every time. But as soon as I turn one way to counter someone, the person behind me starts to attack. And as soon as I turn to counter him, the person behind me again now starts to attack. And it just, they juggle the shit out of me. And that one area, I don't care about going and fighting Al-Mualim, who is the secret Templar, spoilers, of that game. It's been, 5 years now? I think spoilers are okay. I don't care. Because that face-to-face combat just turned me off of finishing one completely.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I got through it and I beat that game because I really love the storyline. So it was enough for me to get through it. But good God, I think the last battle was just me running in circles till my health regenerated, striking a guy once, running in a circle because I'd gotten hit during that, and like just doing that for probably 25, 30 minutes. It was really frustrating, and every game's kind of frustrated me with the hand-to-hand combat. It always looks fluid in the demos, but it never seems to play that fluid.
It gets better with each iteration, but it never plays like it looks.
And this one looks like it's set up to do quick one-strike kills to where you would run through groups of enemies and be able to get rid of them quickly instead of trying to not have groups of enemies and only fighting one or two guys at a time.
Yeah, the combat sequence I really liked was when you have the redcoats sitting at this camp and you see Connor just kind of standing there in the background, and then he moves, takes one, spins, takes another, then does that jump to the redcoat on the horse.
Mm-hmm.
Like that looks like good, smooth, fluid combat that I can really get into.
Yeah, it did totally won me back to the franchise. And now I think Assassin's Creed 3 was kind of in my lower tier of what I was excited for this year. And now it's up there with the top two or three games that I'm going to pick up this year.
Nice.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was a good trailer and looks like good improvements.
Absolutely. And back to their method of unveiling the gameplay trailer. That was good marketing on their part. You know, they got a whole lot of buzz generated for it. They got a lot of community interaction going to unlock this gameplay trailer.
Yeah.
So that's good marketing on their part.
Definitely.
Then we turn around and we talk about Ghost Recon. And they had some good marketing pushes. They had, I forget his name now, but they had an actual Navy SEAL do a three-part series, like of a few minutes each, kind of talking through really the realities of Ghost Recon Future Soldier and how it compares to an actual Navy SEAL operation. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was fantastic. And they had a few things like that that were really good. And then they decided to do Team Ghost with a basketball player, a football player, I think, and a reality star. And apparently there's going to be a rapper as well. And I hate the way that's being marketed.
It reminds me of what the hell was the first Guitar Hero with the set? Was it World Tour that actually brought in the drums and all that stuff? They had the commercial with, I think, Paul Abdul and Tony Hawk and, you know, these quote-unquote famous people playing the instruments, and it was just stupid.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where they don't seem to remember who they're marketing to. And Ghost Recon is a game that can stand on its own. I don't know why they would ever think that the audience would care about celebrity endorsements.
No, it doesn't need it. That's the thing. People who know people who are familiar with shooters or enjoy playing games and enjoy mm-hmm. shooters remotely are going to know about Ghost Recon, and they're going to know enough to, you know, say, hey, I want this game, or hey, you know what, I'd rather play Call of Duty because actually working as a team, fuck that.
Right.
But, you know, Lindsay made a point to me yesterday, which I don't quite agree with, but I can at least see her perspective on it, is that it's marketed at the demographic that wouldn't normally be interested in a shooter, like maybe a gamer's girlfriend saying, oh, hey, Coco's playing, I can play too. I can understand that perspective and that marketing plan, but I think it's more hurtful to the core demographic than it is beneficial, because you're going to have them feel like they're being marginalized or patronized by, you know, the company putting the game out.
Well, yeah, and it's, again, like you said, that game stands on its own. Anybody that's even picked up the beta, which I think was brilliant, they put it out for free, mm-hmm. You can't argue that that game is incredible. It was just fun and fluid. It's a complete sort of departure from the Call of Duty like online stuff we're used to seeing. It was fantastic. They don't need to try to make it a Black Ops level franchise where no. They've got Kobe Bryant running around. You know, it's Ghost Recon's going to sell based on the fans of shooters and the fans of online games.
There's really not much of a chance that this is not going to be a commercially successful title.
Mm-hmm.
Without the Team Ghost stuff, this would have been a very commercially successful title.
Yeah, and by doing that, they're not going to sell Black Ops numbers.
No.
And, you know, that's the thing, is it's not going to bring anybody new in. The only new people they're going to probably grab are younger adopters of the 360 that maybe didn't pick up the other Ghost Recons on it, but are now fans of shooters. They just need to show the gameplay. They just need to show how it works.
Yeah.
Put out that demo. They're going to net enough people. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but
it's a love-hate with, you know, they did a fantastic job with their marketing efforts, and they did the same thing with Revelations that they are doing with 3.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of, you know, community unlock of content in the lead-up, and that's fantastic. That's really well done. And then turn around and do that.
Is it the same people in charge of Ghost Recon and Assassin's Creed, or do they have separate teams that are handling the marketing like that?
I know different people are heads of each game, but I'm not sure if... I'm not sure how much, you know, not knowing how their PR and marketing department works...
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how much input into certain things they have, or if some things are kind of corporate mandated. I don't know exactly what the deal is, as far as that's concerned.
That makes sense that it would be kind of two different strategies. I just don't see why. They have so many divisions over at Ubisoft, though. I mean, that's just a huge company. I think only Activision would be bigger than them, and EA, I guess.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that they have different people working on it, but they should kind of consolidate with some of these things.
Yeah.
I guess we'll see them at E3, which, do you know when E3 starts? Is it?
June 5th through 7th, I believe,
E3.
Although they'll have the pressers on the 3rd and the 4th, most likely.
Yeah, because I think Judges Week stuff starts next week for people.
Yeah. Yeah, it's usually mid to late May.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good times, good times.
We'll go ahead and do our intro. this is episode 29 of Marooners Talk. Do you want to do the title?
You probably got the better impression than I do.
We'll see, it'll be awful. This is episode 29 of Marooners Talk, titled $1 Billion. See, that was bad.
See, but it was good. You invested yourself in that. That was good.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I'm E3. It's exciting times.
Yeah. Just having some water. Unfortunately, wasn't able to get out of work again this year like I did last year to make my way down there.
I've
only got so many fake uncles I can kill.
Yeah, sad. Well, you could have a huge family. I mean, you are Persian, right? I mean, do you guys have
True.
Big families.
We do, but the issue was last year I killed one of my dad's brothers, and he lives in Oklahoma.
Okay.
So that gave me kind of a, I have to actually leave the state excuse. And he's on dial-up, so that helped me with a, I can't do a whole lot of work
right.
excuse. So.
Okay. Well, somebody sent me a message on PlayStation. I don't know if you've seen the mock-up of Xbox's conference schedule, and I don't know if it's legitimate or not. I haven't seen it anywhere else. But it outlined, it was basically Kinect casual games,
mm-hmm.
Halo 4,
mm-hmm.
I forget what the other thing on there was, and then conference end. But it was basically the only games they were talking about were Kinect stuff. New apps.
Yeah, from what I've heard, it was a lot of entertainment focus,
mm-hmm.
Internet Explorer, and Kinect, and then Halo 4, obviously. But yeah, from what I've heard about it, it'll just be like 80 minutes of Kinect, entertainment apps, and Internet Explorer.
Right. Yeah. Which Internet Explorer? What the God? Good God! I don't know how many times people can say this to Microsoft. No one wants to use Internet Explorer.
That's the thing, though. You know, I've been running into this with some work stuff I have to do. And I use Chrome. When Firefox came out, I immediately picked up Firefox, and I was running that forever. When Chrome mm-hmm. came out, I immediately picked up Chrome, and I've been Chrome since then.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to access these sites for my job. And I always use Chrome first. And they're all only Internet Explorer compliant. They don't... It pisses me off to no end because it forces me to use Internet Explorer, and I really don't want to have to do that. Because these companies can't make their way into the current day and make a website that's compatible across, you know, all browsers.
Exactly. It's so frustrating, and Internet Explorer just... It's a pain in the ass. And if you download certain things, I think it was like Yahoo or something, it will install crap onto Internet Explorer, and it will just keep giving you pop-up message after pop-up message after pop-up message. And it's an ugly creature.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's,
I mean, you've seen the pictures online of, you know, oh, my mom said her computer was running slow, so I opened up her Internet Explorer, and it's maybe an inch of actual browser
yeah.
space, and then the rest of the screen is toolbars.
Oh yeah, exactly.
It's hideous.
So I'm not excited to see them what they do with it on the Xbox, and I don't want to browse the internet on my Xbox.
No, not at all. Why would you want to browse on the? You'll have a better internet experience on your smartphone than you will on your Xbox.
Right. And they've been kind of going
that. You have a better internet experience on your Nokia 5210 from 15 years ago than you will on your damn Internet Explorer Xbox.
Yeah, I think, if people have iPads, smartphones, we've got laptops, we have everything in the world around us to look shit up so we don't have to scroll over with the goddamn analog or to the D-pad or the sticks to try to type in four letters, you know, like
right.
I can just turn over.
Because not everyone has the chat pad. Not
exactly.
Everyone has a little keyboard to quickly type things up on. I don't want to have to, we have a chat pad, but if I didn't, I'm not going to sit there and use the joystick or the D-pad to do it. Because it's not fast enough. It is slow enough. It's not fast enough to do that, and it's frustrating, and it's so time-consuming when I could pick up my phone and have it faster and have more content available and visible and functional. It's their attempt at keeping the dying, hopefully, Internet Explorer relevant in some way.
Yeah, it's just strange, and if that little... cut up of their E3 conference is even remotely close. What the hell are they doing game wise? I mean, I know that they will probably announce their Durango console, but can that be any sooner than a year out? Probably two.
Yeah.
I just don't So what are they going to do in the meantime? Are they just going to kind of stop supporting the 360 outside of the Netflix, Hulu, and Kinect stuff, or what?
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot that really Microsoft needs to do to kind of shape up their gaming division. If they want to continue as a competitive console, they need to grab more exclusives. They need to have more content. I don't really like exclusives. I like games that are multi-platform that give me a choice, even though my choice is almost inevitably 360.
Right.
Because that's where my time investment is, on my achievements and, my library. But I like having a choice just in case, If there's, if the tables were turned on Skyrim and the 360 version was almost broken when it came out, but the PS3 version was functional, then I probably would have gone with the PS3 version so I could play the damn game.
Right, and obviously I'm the exact opposite, where all my trophies are invested on the PS3, and I'm deeply committed to that console. But I do love playing 360. I want to have an excuse to pull it out. When they put out Alan Wake, I was ecstatic. I was like, oh, finally another franchise besides Gears and Halo to play. And there really isn't anything. There's some Xbox Live Arcade stuff, but most of that has been coming over to PS3 now as well, or PC.
Eventually, most of it makes its way, yeah.
Right, so even their exclusive stuff is, they're always timed exclusive stuff. So, yeah, there's not a whole lot of motivation for me to want to pick up my Xbox lately. And I keep hoping that they're going to announce a whole slew of exclusives, or they're going to buy some new developers, but there's just nothing there for me. And the Kinect is the same. I look at it the same way I look at the Move and the Wii. I don't ever want to use it. Ever. And they've not given me an experience that makes me want to use it.
Right. Now, the Wii... the Wii.
Right.
Ours broke going on at least a year and a half now, maybe even 2 years, and we haven't cared enough to buy, we haven't cared enough about replacing it or fixing it to spend the $99 that we would have spent to get another one, or $149 or whatever, to do so. Yeah, I don't think I finished Super Mario Galaxy, and it was fun, but not fun enough to justify repairing the broken console.
And, I've got, my Wii's been, God, I don't even know where my Wii is, in all honesty, packed away somewhere. Again, no reason to turn on that console. And at least Nintendo's admitted their mistakes, saying, hey, we're going to focus on gamers with the Wii U.
Well.
We'll see.
They've admitted their mistake while replicating their mistake, except with some modifications.
Exactly. Well, they said they're not going to repeat their same mistakes, but know they will.
They are. Everything that we've seen of it and, touched and had held in our hands has been...
Wii 2.0.
Pretty much. It's catching up to the current generation's capabilities as a next generation device. And it's doing in the most awkward way possible.
What hey, we got hardcore games coming, like announcing Darksiders 2 and Arkham City. I'm already going to have beaten both of those games well before the Wii U launch.
Oh, absolutely.
What the hell's Wii U? They need something specific and special to make me grab it.
Oh, yeah.
And Microsoft's got to do the same thing. If they're going to announce Durango or whatever the hell Xbox 3 or 4, whatever the hell they're going to call it, they need to tell me why I want to buy it besides Halo 5 and Gears 4.
Well, that's the thing. They're taking a page really out of Nintendo's playbook here, because Nintendo has built most of their success off of a few real franchises. Mario, Zelda, Metroid, I guess a little bit. Mega Man. There's this handful of franchises that they've pretty much just repeated over and over and over. With some of them have had some changes, some of them haven't. And that's the page that Microsoft has taken out of their book with, hey, look, here's some more Halo, because it's known, because it's familiar, because it's guaranteed.
But the problem, the issue with Halo and Gears of War and the other Microsoft stuff that they've got, it's in this sort of Call of Duty vein where it appeals to a narrow group of people, and it's never really going to expand. At least with the Mario and the Zelda, they're appealing to nostalgia with you and I, and they're kid-friendly enough that a parent, if you and I had kids, we could say, oh, hey, look, here's a great way to usher our kids into gaming the same way we were. So they have – those franchises will always be successful for that very reason.
Yeah.
But Halo, you know, in 5 years, who's going to give a shit?
Sure.
I mean, even now.
Oh, I don't give a shit now.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's kind of dwindling. Reach sold, but it wasn't nearly the phenomenon that 1, 2, and 3 were. It's sort of just like you either play Call of Duty or you do Halo, and it's the same system every time. It's the same game. So I don't think that Microsoft's going to be able to offer me anything that's going to make me buy the next Xbox unless they come out with some new franchises and they put them out on the 360 first.
Yeah, to build the kind of familiarity with it before they launch the new platform.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not gonna spend all of the $400 or $500 at that point or more on a launch platform with launch franchises that you've never played.
Right.
There's too much risk there. But like you're saying, if they put the first title out on the 360 and give it, you know, half a year or a year to start building a major fan base, and then launch the second iteration of it on the new console, you'll have a much better success rate with people wanting to pick it up.
Yeah, and I feel like Sony has obviously made some missteps this generation. Though I think they're only 2 million behind Microsoft worldwide sales, with a year lag. So, you know, it's doing fine worldwide, but I think that they're setting themselves up now because they have enough franchises with the Infamous and with, I'm trying to think of what else is fantastic. Obviously, God of War.
Uncharted.
If they can ever do another Gran Turismo game. There's enough franchises that have broad enough appeal to people. MLB The Show, stuff like that. That will be system movers for different people.
Yeah.
Xbox, if you're not a Halo or a Gears fan, you're not going to be in a rush to adopt the new system right away. And I think that, you know, at least Sony's branched out enough to where they've got the third person people, they've got the RPG people, they've got sports, they have all these exclusive titles that they can sort of parlay and be like, hey, we got God of War 4 coming out and Uncharted 4 and, you know, Infamous 3 all coming out in the next PlayStation. And that's going to sell the stuff.
That's true. That's a really good point. They do have a more...
varied.
No, sorry. Lindsay just walked by dancing with scissors in her hand. You're going to poke an eye out.
That seems safe.
Yeah. sorry, that was ridiculous. I'll harp on this until either A, the day I die, or B, the day they fix it. One of the biggest things that the PS3 has going against it is its user-unfriendly nature.
Mm-hmm.
The interface is crap. Like, I'm watching the Dragon Ball Z Kai discs because it's awesome.
Yeah.
And so I was watching them in the PS3. And just controlling a DVD with the PS3 control, the PS3 remote, or the controller, is ridiculous. It's not even remotely intuitive.
I think I'm so used to it now that the Xbox seems that way to me. But I understand the complaint. I think the original Xbox interface was much better than what they've done now. Now I don't know what the hell's going on.
Well, granted, the Xbox interface has really declined.
Yeah. I think
it's gotten
now
a lot worse.
I think now the cross media bar is probably easier for people because they can at least find their DVD and find their Hulu and Netflix. Sony's going to have to do a lot of stuff, and they need to. Before they could make things for the Japanese audience and Americans and people across the world were like, yeah, Japanese is the bomb with video games, and they would just follow the lead. Now they need to start having a broader brush and making their systems to speak to us here as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's no longer us asking for the Japanese to import stuff. They have to actually come out and do something for us.
Yeah. Well, there's more to it, though. The Xbox interface has been declining, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've got the Xbox app on my iPhone. I can go onto Xbox.com on my computer, and I can buy games. I can change my settings. I can do everything that almost everything I can do on my Xbox remotely.
Which is fantastic.
It's phenomenal. It is such a great way of letting your consumer access your product from wherever they want to access it from. It's like, if I want to give you my money, let me give you my money from somewhere other than only your console. And
yeah.
Sony just doesn't give a damn about it.
They can't even get the interface and the functionality between their own damn systems with the PSP and the Vita and the PS3.
Yeah.
I mean, they have awesome ideas and concepts, but they can never execute them. And they really need to start thinking with a more Western mentality in mind when they start developing their consoles. Because that's the only way that they're going to be able to, I think, make headway again or win the next cycle of consoles.
Well, it's a massive market.
Mm-hmm.
And with the sheer population that you have here, that should be your primary target. I mean, you know, develop a different interface maybe for the Japanese consumers, maybe something that fits more to their tastes and styles, but really spend some time researching and developing a good interface that fits with how Western gamers want to interact with their consoles.
Well, what's funny is that PlayStation is selling better than Xbox worldwide. So obviously they know Japan and Europe, but Xbox North America just brutalized the PS3.
But well, yeah, for what, 14 months now straight? It's been the top seller.
Exactly. But in Japan, you know, the Kinect was made with a Western audience in mind, where in Japan they can't even use Kinects because their apartments and houses aren't big enough.
Right.
You know, I think Xbox went the exact opposite. Whoever can manage to find the balance between the two and make a system that can go to everyone, at least with, you know, pretty good success, that's going to be the best console next time around. That's going to be the one that wins out.
Well, and stuff with like the Kinect. Okay. You can't really market that in Japan. Then don't even try. Make it something that you're building for the West and then market it in the West and then leave well enough alone. And then maybe develop something else for Japan if you feel like really trying to get something in there. But why bother spending the time and money marketing it somewhere it can't succeed? Because then you, A, waste that money, and B, make it look worse. Because, it couldn't succeed there.
And they need to do what Microsoft does and stop supporting their other systems. Like, in the PSP is outselling the Vita right now in Japan still. Because they're still pumping out tons of PSP games and they're not putting anything out for Vita. Like, they needed to either keep going with the PSP and wait on the Vita, or drop the Vita and quit making games and such for the PSP.
You know, the Vita sold how many units?
1.8 million. I think it's as of March, it's 1.8 million. So, I mean, we probably passed the 2 million threshold, but that's not good.
No.
I mean, even when the 3DS, when everyone was making fun of it for selling poorly, it was pushing a couple 100,000 units a month in Japan, and the Vita can't even hit that mark.
Yeah, there was, I think last month it didn't even hit 100,000.
Exactly. I mean, it's bad, and the games, there's nothing coming out.
No, it's depressing. I mean, granted, we didn't pay full price for ours by any means, just because of some clever trade-ins and taking advantage of some promotions. But it's really depressing. When's the last time a good Vita game came out?
Right.
When's the next time a good Vita game is coming out? That the gaps, you know, every week there's a new. Oh, it seems like it. Every week there's an XBLA game, there's a PSN game, there's a retail title. But the Vita games are just not there.
They need to at least have the PSN games hitting the Vita.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest problem for me is, I mean, I picked up the show on the Vita and I play that periodically. But other than that, there's been nothing to download. I check every week. There's nothing there. I think that for E3, Sony really needs to pull their heads out of their asses and not only show a comprehensive strategy for phasing out the PSP, it interlocking the Vita, the PS3, and putting more content on the Vita. They also need to show how they're going to move to the next generation without shafting Vita owners and PS3 owners and all of that. They need to show an actual vision, which Microsoft is fantastic at doing.
Yeah. Well, my big concern about the Vita is that it's not getting support. It's not going to get support. If it's selling this slowly and they're so... I mean, yeah, 1.8 million people is a lot of people, but not when you compare it to how really it should have been performing.
Right.
What software developer is going to say, hey, let's make a game for the Vita because it's, you know, busting blocks. It's not there.
Well, what do you think about how much the games cost to make when they're making games as big as Uncharted Golden Abyss? I mean, that had to cost, I mean, not obviously as much as Uncharted 3 cost, but... I mean, it's got to be pretty expensive. And if you can only at the top threshold sell 1.8 million copies of a game, if you sell to everyone,
yeah,
you know, that's pretty good. That's commercially successful, but that's the mark of a commercially successful Xbox or PS3 game. They want to sell a million copies. And you know that can't possibly happen. Not everyone that owns a system is going to buy one game.
No.
So, yeah, why is someone like EA, they didn't even develop a Madden for the Vita this year. Why would they? Because they would never be able to make the money back.
No. And there's not, I mean, they don't have to pull anyone in to that. Who are they going to pull in to Madden as Vita owners?
Right.
There isn't a large enough market. And then the chance of Vita owners as a whole being all for Madden, I mean, you're going to have a smaller percentage of that total. You might sell 500,000 copies.
Mm-hmm.
If that. And there's no point in them putting the money and time and effort into it.
I mean, I would go apeshit if they had put out the interchangeable. The show was great because you could put it between PS3 and the Vita. But I want to see them do something more creative with that. And they need to start bundling games. Instead of trying to fracture the market with Madden, say like, hey, if you buy Madden on the PS3, we'll give you a voucher for Vita.
Yeah.
You start building up some support, start showing off what it can do, and, you know, show people what the hell they're missing on the Vita or what they can get out of the Vita, and you might start seeing people support it more often.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. It's a
good piece of hardware.
It's great. Yeah, absolutely. I want to play it badly, but they're not letting me play it.
Yeah.
They're not giving me anything to do.
What I do whenever I do play it, I usually just jump in and do some Rayman Origins levels again. I've played everything that I have for it, and it's just kind of like, give me something new to do with it. I can only do the same thing with it so many times and really get any new enjoyment out of it.
Right. I think that's probably Sony's biggest thing that they need to do at E3 because they have the BioShock Vita game, which now that BioShock Infinite is delayed till next year, we might get the Vita game before we get BioShock Infinite. So they need to push that. They need to show that, hey, the Vita this year is going to be incredible. Like, who cares about the PS4? They need to show what they're going to offer or else the Vita is dead in the water.
Yeah. They do need to give Vita a good year. Like, they need a year that people remember as, oh yeah, that was a good Vita year. You know, every month you've got something strong coming out, more than one thing a month even. You know, some digital download, some retail packaging, just hammer it. And really, if you show focus on it, then you'll get that kind of result.
Right. If they don't have a really great showing at E3 for the Vita, I think we can probably pronounce the Vita dead in the water.
Yeah.
For as slow as it's been selling, there's just no way for them to make it up if they don't put a ton of money. And with their financial issues, I'm not sure they're willing to sink money in to lose before that. So.
Yeah, it's how much money is there? I mean, how much money can you put into something that you're not going to get a return on?
Right.
I mean, it's not like you're going to go out and have some Vita games, you know, earn over $1 billion, like, I don't know, the Avengers or something.
Right. Yeah, it's a bizarre situation for Sony, so yeah. Maybe they should have Joss Whedon write some video games for him.
I'd be cool with that.
I should be. That's a great idea.
You know, give yeah. me a good Firefly first or third person shooter. I'll play it.
Yeah, or freaking anything. I mean, like, put a have Joss Whedon write a independent Avengers game.
Yeah.
You don't play.
I'm surprised there wasn't a tie-in game for the movie.
Well, there was supposed to be that THQ one, but they canceled it because THQ is, you know, crumbling right now.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, because the Captain America game, really, of all of the games that were put out in as tie-ins to the Avengers character movies in the lead-up, the Captain America game was the only really good one. But it was the most recent one, and it was really good.
Yeah, Thor was terrible. Iron Man, the first one, was cool concept, you know. But yeah, the Avengers that THQ was doing was like a first person shooter Avengers game.
That wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, it was bizarre. But I think that they just need to do one that's independent, and not do a tie in to the movie.
No, and for something like the Avengers. It's weird because of the multiple main cast issue, what kind of game you would even design it as. I mean, maybe something like Marvel Ultimate Alliance or X-Men Legends or something.
Yeah, but I feel like the Avengers is kind of Marvel Ultimate Alliance, so maybe they need to do something different. Yeah, I understand it's rough, and that's why I'm really glad they didn't force one out.
Yeah. I'm just surprised that one wasn't forced out. It would have been a major tie-in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just...
That movie is breaking records left and right.
Good God, yeah. They kicked Avatar's ass at the box office, which is all I really cared about. I just wanted to see Joss Whedon standing over with a handful of money laughing at James Cameron.
It was the fastest to $200 million. The fastest to $300 million domestically, the fastest to pass $350 million domestically.
Yep.
And they're projecting, I think it was at least $600 million domestic before it's done. It's already passed $1 billion worldwide.
It's crazy. And I'm extraordinarily happy for the success. And I'm glad that we're going to actually see a continued series now with the Avengers that is going to have that high level of quality. Like, they're going to expect that, and they're going to keep making it, I hope, anyway.
Well, yeah, they've got Thor 2 next year. They've got Captain America 2 and Iron Man. No, they've got Iron Man 3 and Thor 2 next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Captain America 2 and, I think, a Hulk in 14.
Yeah, they have a structure, and they've obviously... done the Greenlight Avengers 2, and they'll have a Hulk in there somewhere.
They have to.
They've got Ruffalo locked up for him, so they'll put that in there somewhere. But it's really exciting, and I still, when Batman is finished, when the Nolan trilogy is done, I hope DC sees it and really just starts to kill it with their characters, because they've got some incredible properties at DC, but they can't seem to put a good movie together.
There's it's tough when you talk about DC and movies, because they've had some good efforts. Like, they've, you know, they had Nolan's trilogy, and they had the Christopher Reeve's Superman and Superman 2, the Richard Donner cut, not the theatrical cut.
Right.
And then, you know, you had 3 and 4, but we won't talk about those. and then, you know, that's pretty much all. Superman Returns was good. But, it did miss the mark a little as far as, I don't know, getting more appeal to it and really building a unified universe. Just because it was in that gray area of, you know, it's kind of a sequel to Superman 2, but it's kind of not, and there's not really much going on except story development. But if it's a sequel to Superman 2, we've already had two movies of story development. It was good. It missed on a lot of marks.
Yeah, and it was a really creative attempt, and I still like the movie. I'm
oh yeah,
okay,
I've got the collector's edition with the little comic book and everything.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was actually watching it the other day, and I'm like, you know, this is a good movie, but Superman, the DC characters are so tough because they're so mythic and so powerful. You know, Green Lantern can do anything. Yeah. Superman is like, you know, he is literally a god. So it's tough for them to have a villain in an action sequence that they can play with. But the Avengers managed to do it. Maybe they just need to kind of nerf the powers of Superman a little bit.
Who would? That's the thing. If you have, you know, all the individual movies leading up to a JLA movie, well, mm-hmm. I mean, you've got Doomsday and Darkseid.
Yeah, that's true.
What else is there?
And that's, yeah. I mean, the Avengers managed to have a villain that was believable, but their characters aren't infinitely powerful. And I, you know, they're bringing in Thanos like we talked about.
Yeah.
And I think if they can do that well, DC could pull Darkseid and do it well. But it has to be done seriously and not campy comic book. I thought Green Lantern was so campy comic book with the way that they did Parallax and I can't even remember his name now. I want to say Hank Henshaw, but it's not Hank Henshaw. Whoever Peter Sarsgaard played. Hector.
Hector Hammond.
Yeah, goddamn. Thank you. They were just so silly. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Well, maybe that's the thing, though. It seems like the DC villains and heroes are more silly. I mean, you know, Marvel has its share of ridiculous villains, but they've got a more solid stable to choose from when they're going for something a little more on the serious side.
Yeah.
And DC, well, you know, you've got... You've got some doozies in there. And you have some serious villains as well, but you have someone like Doomsday, and you put Doomsday into a movie, there's really only one thing you can do with him, and that's going to end up being a Death of Superman movie.
Yeah.
What else are you going to do with introducing Doomsday?
They need to bring in new talent, and they need to not try to be beholden to the comic book mythos. Like, did you see Chronicle?
No, I haven't yet. I've been meaning to, but Lindsay gets sick from the kind of found footage, shaky cam stuff.
Yeah, I did a little bit of that movie, but it was incredible. It was written by Max Landis, who also did the riff on the Death of Superman with Elijah Wood.
I didn't know who he was or about Chronicle until I saw that.
Yep, same here.
And that opened me up to Chronicle.
It was amazing, but Chronicle, I thought, was just an amazing superhero movie. Just blew my mind. It was great. And I think someone like him could manage to bring out the humanity in the characters and give them challenges enough to make it action-packed and to make it fun without having to be beholden to some giant world-killing evil.
Yeah, I would hesitate putting him in control of any DC characters, though, for film, just because of the sheer... I don't know. I completely lost the word. The sheer disrespect he has for Superman.
Yeah.
And I disagree with a lot of what he said in that bit that he had. But he really just has it in for Superman in a way that, you know, he was talking out of his ass for half of that thing. You know, people don't care about Superman. Well, you know, he's one of the most popular characters in the world, not just comic book characters. I mean, people know who Superman is. Superman is relevant. And it was just his personal bias of, oh, you know, fuck Superman, being generalized over the entire world, that I would hate to see what he would do to Superman if he had control of it.
Mm-hmm. I almost think that that's better, someone that's taking over with a really critical eye. I mean, maybe not him specifically, but Joss Whedon has definitely said a lot of things about comic books that were less than flattering. And I think that you need someone that loves the material and wants people to love it as well and isn't going to be beholden to fanboy bullshit and think that the character's, you know, the golden epitome of all that's great in literature.
Agreed. Yeah, but there has to be at least a respect for the character and a way of reimagining the character that's still true to it instead of, you know, just pissing on what it is and creating something that doesn't. I mean, it has to resonate with the character for the fans to care.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm curious to see, in the wake of the Avengers and Joss Whedon being the
he can do anything he wants right now.
Oh yeah, the biggest name in movies right now. The guy put James Cameron to shame, and that's saying something.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to see how many people follow suit and try to copy what he did.
Yeah, I really want to see what he wants to do next, whether he's going to push something independent that he's been having trouble getting done for a while and use his new clout to do it, or if they're going to, you know, do some more big budget stuff. Excuse me.
I can just see him walking into Fox right now with the box office receipts of Avengers and saying, "This is what you bitches could have had if you'd kept Firefly."
Yeah. Well, it's as much as I'd love to have Firefly back, just because that really is a fantastic space western. It's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. The way he wrote the characters, the way they interacted, the adventures, it was top notch. But I want it in my memory to always stay top notch. And so yeah, that's why I also don't want it to ever come back. You know, I've got Firefly, I've got Serenity. It's perfect. Little nitpicks here and there, but you know what? Fuck it. It's perfect. I don't want that ruined.
I kind of agree. I feel that way about a lot of shows. I like things to be in small doses before they get pounded into the ground.
Yeah. That's why I like British TV a lot more than American TV for the most part.
Hell yes. Like, Lost only got good again when it started doing 14 episode seasons. Mm. And it could just concentrate instead of worrying about filling up 20 episodes.
Yeah. Well, it's like The Office. In the UK, it was two series of 6 or 7 episodes each and a Christmas special or two. And it was done. And it was all fresh. Nothing got rehashed to excess. And then you have the U.S. Office, where the first season and a half was essentially a rehash of the entire British series up to a certain point. And then it was an additional 4, 5, 6 seasons. I don't even know what season it's in now. It's season 7 or season 8, perhaps, of just the same gags and the same jokes and just going too far. It didn't need to keep going.
Yeah, I think they should have killed Buffy the Vampire Slayer after season 5. I was really happy with a lot of the way Joss Whedon shows specifically have ended. I really want Community to have 13 episodes next year and finish and never come back. I really want to see Joss Whedon take some projects and just be able to wrap them up. Like, hey, I want to do Firefly. Give me 15 episodes. I'll do this story or stuff like that. I think that he could probably get some TV stuff done, and I just hope it doesn't go long term.
Yeah. Well, and I've liked what he's been doing with, you know, I haven't really read the Buffy comics, but I read the Firefly comics, and it was great. It was a way of filling in some of the backstory and some of the rest of the story without having to make it in film and potentially ruin, you know, what you remember as Firefly or Serenity. It was good. You got some, you know, hint of what Shepherd Book really was, and you got just more story, and it was great.
I completely agree. I think a funny parallel now to the James Cameron thing, where he said all he's doing now is Avatar. James Cameron's life and his movies are now just going to be Avatar. I forget where he did that interview at, but I mean, I read through it, and that's what he wants to do. He's like, he did his Titanic stuff, and now he's just going to do his Avatar. And I love that Joss Whedon is probably going to be the exact opposite. He gets all this clout now because he made the Avengers and kicked the shit out of box office records. And now he can experiment.
Yeah.
And that's what a real artist and someone that is really spectacular manages to do.
So that just reminded me. Have you ever seen Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back?
Oh, of course.
All right. So, you know, when they're on the set and they go into the set of Good Will Hunting 2.
Yep.
And there's the argument between Matt Damon and Ben Affleck saying, no, you make the artsy, you make the commercial movie, then you make the artsy movie. Then you make the commercial movie, then you make the artsy movie.
Yes, exactly. That's
that's just the first thing that popped into my head.
And that's pretty much what Kevin Smith tried to do too, I think, but to absolutely no success. But yeah, it's perfect. So we will have some awesome comic book stuff, and I probably some good TV projects coming up from this. And at least we have a couple more years of great Marvel movies, and we'll see if Man of Steel can rein us in.
Yes, yeah. I don't know. I like Cavill. He was good in The Tudors, and he was good in The Count of Monte Cristo. He was okay, I guess, in The Immortals. It wasn't that great of a movie to begin with, but whatever. So I'm mainly from The Tudors. He had a really good presence. He acted it well. He was very likable, and I'm looking forward to seeing him in something more successful like Man of Steel. Hopefully will be. What is it? Zack Snyder? Right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm hesitant about him. He does some good stuff, but he has these habits that really piss me off, and I'm worried that they're gonna, you know, make their way into a Superman movie where it really isn't necessary.
Yeah, I agree. That's Zack Snyder is very hit or miss for me. I like him on a lot of levels, but he's iffy.
He's got his crutches, just like Michael Bay has his crutches and McGee has his crutches.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's better than Bay or McGee, but...
He is better, but he's got the crutches and he relies on them.
What they want to do is they want to make a Christopher Nolan Superman series, and I don't think Snyder is the guy to make a long-running Superman series.
Well, two things. One, Snyder is not the guy to make a long-running series like that. And two, no. Superman should not be like Nolan's Batman. It should be the exact opposite. I mean, that's the thing about Superman and Batman. They are, aside from a few core similarities, they are diametrically opposite in how they experience everything and how they approach everything. And so it needs to have a completely different feel to it. And that's also one of the difficulties with doing a JLA movie. Is because you have to have the, you know, like, I think we were talking about it last week. Tom was saying Nolan's Batman can't exist in, you know, a JLA kind of universe.
Correct.
And that's part of the problem, is that you have to have more of a Burton Batman, to be honest, that more comic Batman to fit in with the likes of Superman and Wonder Woman and Green Lantern, who are all so absolutely comic book characters.
Yeah, I don't know what DC can do to make better movies. Their animated stuff is phenomenal. The animated movies they keep putting out are great. I love every single one of them. I just don't see how these things can translate to the big screen and be commercially popular.
It's tough. It requires so much more special effects than a lot of the Marvel stuff does, just because of the scale. Like you were saying, you know, Superman is godlike. The scale of the powers and what they can do necessitates large-scale special effects, whether it's practical special effects or digital special effects, whatever it is, it's necessary in order to pull it off. Whereas it's much less necessary, you know, with the Avengers. Obviously the Hulk was a special effect, and Captain America's shield was a special effect, and the ham and Mjolnir and the lightning and, you know, Iron Man's suit, but it didn't have that overwhelming feel of everything being a special effect.
everyone is still vulnerable too. Yeah. That's what's interesting. And I almost think like it's the same reason you can't have a good Superman video game. You can't have this guy that can't be hurt by bullets.
Superman 64 was pretty badass.
You mean the one section that actually worked? Yeah. Jesus God, that game was awful. I'm trying to get a copy of it though, because I really want to play it again. Just at pure masochism.
That's a good one. There you go.
Yeah. But you just can't have a good Superman game because he's invincible. They need to make him vulnerable and weaker, like they have with Thor and with the Hulk and these people that have vulnerabilities and
well,
that
and
can be
tough.
Hurt.
I mean, if you do a Superman game where he's vulnerable, it's really tough because you either have to play as with his enemies and give him his more magical enemies to give that kind of vulnerability with a properly powered Superman, or you have to do maybe an early Superman who's still, you know, he's still absorbing sunlight, so he isn't at his full peak. You know, he's got some strength and some powers, but he's not all the way there yet. He can still, you know, take a punch and feel it. And then that's not really fun Superman. That's not why people are into Superman as much.
Yeah, I think he should almost be a peripheral character. Maybe have him show up for a Justice League movie, but they need to kind of back away from him, possibly, and concentrate on making a JLA movie using smaller characters. You know, a Wonder Woman, some more Green Lantern, Green Arrow, someone at, there's other characters they could use, and then have Superman sort of be the you know, deus ex machina of
Justice and that's what he is for the most part in that case. But then comic books, they get so comic booky that, you know, they always put in a way of balancing him somehow.
Yeah, well, I'm curious to see what they announce in the light of the Avengers success. I think that's really going to push DC against the wall, where they're going to try to react by making a Justice League movie. And that could be quite hysterically bad.
It could be. And they don't get it. Part of it is that the characters are really tough to translate in that way, and part of it is that I don't think DC gets it. They have some lucky shots, like with Nolan, but I put more of that responsibility on Nolan than on DC, as far as how to make Batman into a successful movie. I just don't think they get it. And I really don't. I've gotten to a point where I don't want to see too many movies out of DC anymore.
I completely agree. I'm pretty much done. And they're desperate enough to get something out of them. They're making a sequel to Green Lantern, which for the budget bombed. So, Joss Whedon really changed the entire landscape of comic book films.
Hopefully for the better. We need him.
Marvel
Studios
raised the bar.
Has been doing a really good job.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Almost consistently, Marvel Studios has been doing a good job. Fox, with the Marvel rights, has been doing an awful job. There were bits and pieces of the X-Men films that I enjoyed, and First Class was good, and I think that's still a Fox film. Although I have a lot of problems with First Class also. Especially with chronology in that movie, just makes my head want to explode. But, you know, Marvel Studios has been doing it well. They've been doing it right. I can't wait to see more out of them. And right now, it's the big Avengers kick. I swear to God, if I don't get a goddamn fantastic Deadpool movie soon, although I think maybe he's a Fox property right now also, because of his appearance in the Wolverine movie.
You're probably right. Fox probably owns everyone that showed up in those movies.
God damn it. I do not want to see a Fox Deadpool movie.
Oh, it'll be Ryan Reynolds at his finest.
Yeah. I don't mind him as Wade Wilson, honestly, because he's a smartass and Wade's a smartass. Physically, I think he fits the kind of the leaner, muscular look of Deadpool well. He doesn't need to be super bulked out or anything, beyond a certain point, at least. Just the way it was written and just everything about that character in the Wolverine movie made me want to punch whatever I was watching it on when I eventually watched it. I guess one of the TVs, sure. I just wanted to punch through the screen because it was offensive.
It was bad. So bad.
And it was offensive not in the way that Deadpool is meant to be offensive, but offensive just because it was so bad.
Offensive to anyone with good taste.
Completely
agree. So, hey, we'll see what happens. Props to Joss Whedon, and hopefully he made them enough money where they can buy the rights to at least a couple of those people. buy Deadpool back from Disney or from Fox.
I hope so. I'm really looking forward to something good out of Deadpool because I think they can do a fantastic movie with him. I mean, it would be hilarious. You have the fourth wall being broken in half of the movie. You have action. You have, you know, witty comments. You've got a batshit crazy assassin with a healing factor. It has so much potential to be a hilarious, awesome action movie that people will go in. They'll enjoy the action. They'll be laughing halfway through the movie, almost like Avengers. It was a fantastic action movie when there was action.
Yeah.
It was so funny. You remember all these moments and all these jokes and the way they interacted. I want that.
I hope to God they do it, but I'd rather them not do it than make a bad one.
Oh, absolutely.
So we'll see. If they don't give it to somebody with the credentials of a Joss Whedon, or I don't know who else really would handle the humor well, but then I just don't want to have him do it.
Yeah, so. I don't know.
Well, we'll see, and maybe D3 will see an Avengers game announced by somebody.
Maybe. I don't know, it'd be a bit late at that point, but I'm late to take advantage of the movie tie-in bonus. But, you know, if they do a good Avengers game, it could do really well.
Yeah, I'm hoping. We'll see. So, yeah, we got 2 or 3 more weeks until E3, and that will probably be hectic for announcements. So, yeah, but I guess we'll see what happens this week.
Anything else?
No, that's pretty much it. Don't think anything else exciting is going on. I think everyone's going to save big announcements or anything cool until we have E3.
Yeah. All right. Well, has been episode 29 of Marooners Talk. You can find us at maroonersrock.com, facebook.com/maroonersrock, Twitter @marooners_rock, and on iTunes under Marooners Talk. All right. See you guys next week.